Liz Corey.
And I'm Katie King.
And this is True Crime New England, Case Profiles Edition.
Hello, welcome back to another mini episode.
We are so happy to have you here, per usual, for our case profiles. It's always so important that we have you here. Isn't that right, Katie?
Yes, absolutely. And if you guys are not familiar with our mini episodes, our case profiles, it is where we tell you guys, as well as each other, about cases of people of color based in New England.
Absolutely. And for those of you who have not listened, what we basically do is I will research a story, Katie will research a story of people of color disappearances, suspicious deaths, murders, things of the like, and we will tell each other and you, like Katie just said, these stories. I do not know what Katie's about to tell me. Katie doesn't know what I'm about to tell her. It's all a mystery. The point of these case profiles is to spread awareness of these stories because it is a simple fact. People of color in New England, and frankly, all over the world, just do not get as much media attention as those of the white people. That's just the simple fact. So what we're doing is we're bringing more awareness as much as we can, and we are happy to do so. So whether it's a full episode, a case profile, or simply a website post, we will do whatever we can. So today, because it is an odd number and I went first last case profiles, our dear Katie is going to start us off today with her story. I have not heard it. My oohs, my ahs, my questions are all going to be genuine. Just putting that out there, because one time someone did accuse us of being super fake. That is untrue. I don't even know the name of the person she's about to tell us about. So, Katie, if you wouldn't mind, would you tell me and our lovely, lovely listeners the no doubt horrific and probably unsolved story that you've got for us today?
Liz, I would not mind at all. And it is unsolved.
Wow.
I will be telling you and our lovely listeners about the murder of Deanna Pugh.
Oh.
My sources today are the Hartford Courant and Fox 61 News.
Okay.
On February 6th, 2007, 45-year-old Deanna Pugh had just dropped off one of her 11 grandchildren and had parked her car on the corner of Flatbush Avenue and Zion Street outside of Ray's Grocery in Hartford, Connecticut.
She had 11 grandchildren at 45.
Uh-huh.
What a full life for that woman.
Crazy.
Wow.
Her 22-year-old daughter and another grandchild of hers, an 8-year-old girl, were in the car with her, and she stepped out of the parked car to have a cigarette because she didn't want to smoke with her grandchild in the car. Very responsible.
Sure.
Secondhand smoke kills.
Absolutely.
Good lady. Practically seconds later, after she had gotten out of her car, Deanna was shot.
What?
A dark-colored Honda with the make between 1990 and 2000 had pulled up alongside her car just before 6 p.m., and the driver fired several shots before peeling off and heading south on Zion Street.
Whoa.
One of the bullets had struck Deanna in her chest.
Oof.
Another bullet shattered the driver's side window of her car, so even if she was in the car, she probably would have been fatally shot anyway. And another bullet lodged itself in the window of a nearby pawn shop that police had found later. So three shots at least in total, and one fatally struck her in the chest.
Wow.
So Deanna's daughter, who was in the car this whole time, mm-hmm. and two witnesses helped get Deanna into the back seat of her own car and haul ass to the hospital while her daughter's on the phone with 911. So an ambulance met them on the way and took Deanna the rest of the way by ambulance mm-hmm. to Hartford Hospital, but she was pronounced dead on arrival.
Oh.
A neighborhood man said that he was getting out of his car across the street when he saw Deanna park her car, and then within 5 minutes, he said he heard five pop, pop, pops, stating, "I think it was coming from another car going by."
Huh.
He also called 911. Another man at the corner grocery store said that while he was serving customers, he heard five or six shots, looked out the window, and saw a crowd around Deanna on the street. Deanna's family said that her death was the kind of senseless violence she had tried to escape when she moved from Hartford to the Thomasville section of Enfield 2 years ago.
Oh.
And she was only in Hartford that day to bring her daughter and granddaughter to a doctor's appointment.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
Didn't even live there. Used yeah. to live there.
Hated
thought it.
It
was getting too unsafe.
Yeah.
Dipped.
Ugh.
Was in Hartford for one day.
That's awful.
Pulls over, gets out of the car to be responsible and smoke a cigarette.
Sure.
Shot in the chest.
Oh, my God.
Within, like, seconds.
Yeah. No kidding.
Deanna was a mother to 4 children and a grandmother to 11, with a 12th on the way that she was thrilled about.
Yeah.
She was a fantastic mother and grandmother and was known as, quote, a gold star. She shined on everybody she touched.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. That's terrible.
She was added to the 5th edition of the Connecticut Cold Case deck of cards, and she is the queen of clubs. Anyone with any information on the murder of Deanna Pugh is asked to please call Lieutenant Scott Sanson, commander of the Major Crimes Division, at 860-527-6300, extension 5230. You can also call Detective Mark Fowler at 860-527-6300, extension 5439, or the department's confidential tip line at 860-527-TIPS, T-I-P-S.
Wow. That's awful.
Ridiculous.
I hate these stories because it so often, it's the same thing where they're like, they leave the town or they leave somewhere or they're hoping to have a better life because they're escaping violence or they're trying to stop their kids or their loved ones from being in an area where there's violence. And then they literally are killed by violence.
Mm-hmm.
That's so unnecessary.
Yep. Literally a grandmother. Literally a grandmother.
Ugh.
Just minding her own business for a split second outside of her car to smoke a cigarette.
So innocent. And the fact that she was just taking her daughter and her granddaughter to get doctor's appointments. So simple, so innocent. Oh, that breaks my heart.
I know. And for the 8-year-old granddaughter, too, to be in the car when that happened and for a bullet to have hit the driver's side window.
Yeah.
Like, thank God her daughter and her granddaughter weren't shot.
Yeah.
That could have been crazy.
Yeah. Like, it could have been her daughter driving and her in the passenger seat.
Yeah.
You know, like, it could have been so, oh, just awful.
I know.
And I wonder, like, did they ever say anything about, like, it was just a random act of violence, I'm guessing?
I wonder if they thought that she was someone different.
Right.
Or, I mean, clearly, like, what grandmother is out here? Like, what crimes is a grandmother committing? Like,
no.
I don't know if they thought that she was, like, in a gang or like on the wrong territory or whatever. I don't know. It's so senseless.
Ugh.
And the fact that we only know that it's a dark Honda between the years 1990 to 2000, come
yeah.
on.
Yeah. There's no DNA that could be found.
Right.
Like maybe on a bullet fragment. Maybe. But I'm sure they would have ruled that out by now, mm-hmm. you know? Wow. That's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I hated that. Poor woman. Ugh. And with the 12th grandbaby on the way. Oh, she must have been so excited. That's terrible. Oh, that's just awful. Well, I also have an awful story for you and our lovely listeners. I'm going to tell you guys about the murder of Nereida Melendez. I have 3 sources today. Well, 2 from the same source and another source. I have 2 articles from the Worcester Telegram. In an article from CBS News. 17-year-old Nereida Melendez, lovingly known as Nettie, was described as delightful, vibrant, and also a firecracker. She was known to be lively and popular and had huge plans for the future. She was to go to college in the fall, she wanted to study business, and she was eager to achieve her dream of starting a family someday. That was like her biggest dream. She wanted to be a mom. On June 5th, 1989, Nereida, Nettie, was going to be graduating from high school. But before she was going to graduate, she was going to be dropping off a van that she had borrowed from the company she had worked for. It was a Shrewsbury Street cleaning company. And she was employed here as a receptionist. So even though it was an exciting day, she still had work to do. She sounded like a very hard worker mm-hmm. and very ambitious, which I immediately was like, yes, girl, you go. Obviously, of course, like I said, Nettie was very excited to be graduating high school. She had been up all the night before. She was baking. She couldn't wait. She was ready to celebrate, so she was baking her whole family like cookies and brownies. It was very cute. She couldn't get over the fact that she was about to literally start the next steps of her journey of life. She was so excited to go to college because college meant growing up, which meant having a job, which meant starting a family, which was like her ultimate goal. And I empathize with that greatly because that was like once I graduated high school, and you know this, Katie, I was like, I'm going to be a mom soon. Like, my greatest dream, it's coming true. And I mean, here I am, what, 7, 8 years later? And I'm like, okay. But I am a nurse, and that was my greatest dream, so we're good.
Correct. And we're still young.
And we're still young. Right.
Too young.
Right, too young. But she was just so excited, and, you know, graduating high school is a big deal. So she was very proud of herself, as she should be. So, when she didn't show up to her graduation ceremony at North High School in Worcester, that was extremely bizarre, obviously. Her whole family was absolutely gripped with fear because this was not only so unlike her, but so unlike anyone was like, this is not normal. She was supposed to be graduating. She wasn't a bad student. She wasn't a bad kid. This is just bizarre. Like, she was scheduled to be here. She was so pumped. Why hasn't she had her graduation? The same evening of her graduation, Nettie's purse was found by someone walking their dog near Belle Pond. And thankfully, they turned it into police. At this point, she hadn't been reported as a missing person. It was actually, ironically, around this time that her family had gone in to make a missing persons report when that woman had brought in her purse that she had found.
Wow.
So they were like, oh, this is strange. Like, this purse just came in and it's looks like it belongs to your daughter that you're reporting missing. So they were like, oh no. Which, weird coincidences, but it was nice of that woman to actually bring in her purse. Because, you know, sometimes people will just leave it. Some people will take what they want out of it and just toss it, you know. Mm-hmm. A whole bunch of things could happen. It wasn't until the next morning that Nettie was actually found. It was a search done by local investigators and, of course, her family when they found her body. She had been strangled with the strap of her pocketbook and then buried under a damp pile of leaves and brush. She was very close to where her purse had actually been discovered. So that woman, I bet you once she found the purse, she probably took her dog and, you know, walked the opposite direction, went to the police station, whatever. I bet you if she kept walking, or maybe her dog would have caught her scent, you know? An autopsy was done on Nettie's body, and it determined that while she had been strangled, she had not been molested or assaulted in any other way. It seemed like a very quick crime of opportunity, just, oh, I gotta get this done and fast. According to her family members, they seemed to theorize that she was killed by someone she knew. This theory stems from the fact that once Nettie dropped off her company van, she did not have a direct ride to her graduation rehearsals, so perhaps she grabbed a ride from someone she knew. Her brother, Peter Vasquez, speculates that perhaps her killer committed the crime by accident, as if maybe they had an argument in this car, like supposedly she had gotten in this car with someone she knew, and it went too far, and then the perpetrator just, like I said, opportunity, strangled her, and then tried to hide her body. And that could, of course, correlate with the lack of injuries or assault to Nettie, as if it was like a quick murder and dump. Nettie's sister-in-law, Margarita Vasquez, said in an interview with the Worcester Telegram that she had been told by investigators that there had been DNA evidence at the crime scene, and that from this, a person of interest was identified, but there was no charges due to a lack of evidence.
Wow.
I find this hard to believe from the investigation side point, not from Mrs. Vasquez, as DNA is literally evidence. Right? Right? Isn't that evidence? Lack of evidence, there's the evidence, the DNA. Physical evidence? I don't know. Weird. Despite this DNA and the theories of her knowing her killer, almost 35 years has passed now, and Nettie's killer still remains free. On the 30th anniversary of Nettie's death, her brother is quoted as saying, quote, he's had 30 Christmases, he's had 30 Thanksgivings, he's had birthday parties, he's had cookouts, he's had 30 years. Nettie's never had that. Which just broke my heart. It's awful stuff. Their mom, of course, heartbroken, searching for their little girl who disappeared on what was supposed to be one of the happiest days of her life.
Right.
Graduating high school is so important. Big accomplishment. And she clearly had a lot of ambitions. So, and I remember reading in this article that Peter, her older brother, was with the family and they were watching, you know, the students come over the hill to be graduating, and they were just so confused when Nettie wasn't there. They were like, okay, there's all, there's, you know, Linda, oh my god, her friend, Kathy, whatever. And then just no Nettie. It's awful stuff.
Oh my god.
Very sad. Anyone with information may contact the Unresolved Homicide Unit at 508-799-8651. And that is the tragic murder of Nereida Nettie Melendez over 35 years ago now. Just terrible stuff. She was so cute, too. She had a cute little face. And I just feel like, as someone who my whole life, I was like, okay, I just gotta get to graduation, and then I'll be in college, and I'll have my dreams, and I'll have, you know, everything I've ever wanted, and everything will be okay. Like, that was all I had. I totally empathize with her. Like, she just wanted it so bad. And she was so close. And just this senseless act of violence for no reason. Even if there was an argument in the car, no argument could be great enough to be murdered. Ridiculous.
That is, and for her family too, to be watching, like waiting for her to cross the stage.
Yes.
For them to call her name, and then they do call her name, and she's nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
Knowing how excited she was, knowing that this was such a goal and a milestone for her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no other way to look at that and be like, oh shit, like something is really, really wrong. Like, there's no way they were gonna brush it off, like, oh, she must be tying her shoe in the belly.
Right.
There's no way. They probably knew immediately
that
there was something really, really wrong.
Oh, yeah. And they left immediately. I'm not sure if they stayed for the whole graduation ceremony in case she showed up or whatever, but they immediately went to the police station that night and were like, okay, something's going on. It had been several hours since she was seen dropping off that van, so she had not been missing dead for very long. It wouldn't have made much of a difference at that point, but they were, like, immediate, like, okay, something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And you police cannot tell me something's not wrong because she was supposed to be graduating high school today.
Correct.
Obviously something's up. So it's just terrible stuff. This poor woman. And to not be solved, even with this DNA evidence, I don't know. That's bizarre. Hopefully they retest it sometime with all this new testing they've been doing.
Yeah.
Just terrible. Anyway, two awful stories, once again, in these case profiles, to nobody's surprise. Just terrible stuff. If you guys want to reach out to us and tell us your thoughts on these two cases, you can find us on Instagram at truecrimene, or you can send us an email at truecrimene@gmail.com.
We also have a website, truecrimene.com. You could go to our contact page. We have a handy-dandy submission tool that allows you to be anonymous if you so choose. You can, of course, leave your name. We have covered cases that people have suggested, and they've left their name, so we've mentioned who suggested it to us at the top of the episode. But it is always an option to be anonymous, especially if you are close to a case in any way. And do not let the lack of information deter you. Liz, you had 3 sources. I had 2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes, a lot of the time, we have 1.
Mm-hmm.
Or you guys would be really surprised at what we can do and how much of a case we can discuss
mm-hmm.
with not a lot of information. So send it to us regardless. Any of the above methods, do not be deterred. And worst case scenario, we will still take that information and put it on our Instagram and our website so that we are still getting it out there in some capacity and we are not back at square one, just leaving it more unsolved and not talked about.
Absolutely. And with that, we'll see you on Thursday.
Bye.
Goodbye.